Now that Roe and Casey are overturned, what should be pro-lifers' plan of attack against abortion? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before I get started, just want to encourage people to smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, and don't set up notifications. I think that's going to be my new tagline for that part of the show. Also, you can follow us on social media at Crisis Mag and all the different social media outlets, wherever you might lose brain cells at various social media sites. I've been on a very anti-social media internet kick lately. I realize that. Obviously, I'm still on it. I know a lot of people are. But, you know, sometimes we have to, like, recognize its limits. Also, we stream these Tuesday afternoon podcasts on YouTube and Odyssey, Facebook, and Twitter. So you can catch us at any of those different locations. And then it goes up permanently on those locations as well if you miss us when we're live. Okay, let's go ahead and get started here. So we're talking about abortion again. We're talking about the post-Roe world. We're talking about the Dobbs decision. But specifically, what I want to address is what exactly should pro-lifers do going forward? Because obviously we all know, it's been said by everybody, including me, that the battle against abortion isn't over. It just has gone into a new phase. And honestly, let's just reiterate that the Dobbs decision was the necessary first step to really ending abortion. It couldn't happen until Roe was overturned. It was impossible because of Roe to really eliminate legal abortion in this country. That had to be the first step. And, you know, the more I've thought about Dobbs, the more I've kind of realized it really is the best possible decision the court could make. Because I know, although all of us pro-lifers, we want a constitutional amendment to end abortion, and that is obviously the end goal. The final goal is to have abortion completely legal in all 50 states through a constitutional amendment. But the fact is, the way our Constitution is set up, this really is a matter for the states unless a constitutional amendment is made. And so the first step towards getting towards a constitutional amendment is to bring it back to the states. Another reason I really like Dobbs is because it was the Supreme Court doing what it should be doing at all times, which is not legislating and actually reversing the legislation that basically Roe was. And so I'm very encouraged. I think the Dobbs decision was perfect. It's not up to the court. And although we might like this result, it's not the Supreme Court to make abortion illegal in all 50 states. That is something for each state to decide. I mean, if you think about it, murder statutes are in all the 50 states. Rape statutes are in the 50 states. These things should not be federal decisions. Now, abortion is a little bit different in that there is debate about whether or not the unborn child is a human person deserving of legal protections, which is why I do think we need to ultimately push for a constitutional amendment to end abortion. But let's look at what our status is right now. Now, I'm pulling up a map here. For those who are listening, you won't be able to see it, but I'll try to describe it. So this is a map of the 50 states. Now, you'll see these all over the place. And I've noted, and it's a map of the different status of abortion laws in each state. And I've seen they contradict each other a lot. Now, I took this one from Planned Parenthood, because honestly, I figured they're going to be the most knowledgeable in some ways of where they can't do business and what their limitations are in do business. And I think they might be doing things on the side illegally, but this essentially, though, is, I think, an accurate map. And basically what it shows is that in seven states, I'll name them because they're the best states right now: Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, Missouri, and South Dakota, abortion is essentially illegal. It's seven states. Another, I think it's 12 states, we have abortion is restricted, heavily restricted, where you basically have restrictions maybe after 6 weeks, after 15 weeks, something like that. And then another 8 states where there are some restrictions, but they're not that tight yet. So you have about 27 states right now in America where abortion is more restricted than it was before Dobbs, and where it's more difficult to get an abortion than it was, or impossible to get legally in some states than it was before Dobbs. Another thing I want to note about this map is it's very interesting how essentially from about Utah all the way over to Virginia, with the exception of Illinois, Montana, what's up with Montana? Why don't they have better laws? And New Mexico, you have at least some, that's where all the restrictions are. So it really is an example of the coasts are very different from the middle of the state. Now, Illinois is, I think that's just Chicago. From what I understand, that's not Illinois. Anywhere outside of Chicago, you're not going to get support for abortion anywhere like you would in Chicago. They basically dominate the state. And so you almost, if you're breaking up the country, that middle part could be a country all to itself if we just can do something about Chicago almost. But anyway, what we see here, though, is there are varying degrees of restrictions on abortion in the various states. And so we should consider that when we're deciding as pro-lifers, okay, what should we do to eliminate legalized abortion in the country? What steps should we take? We need to look at the map when we decide what we do. Somebody in Texas is going to do something very differently than somebody in California. Now, before I really get into the various suggestions, practical tips here, I just want to make it clear. These are just my personal recommendations, my personal observations. I have not been involved in full-time pro-life activist work since the 1990s. For a number of years, I was full-time doing pro-life work, or as a student I was, and then after college I did for a while. And I haven't done that since, and I still have been involved, obviously, in pro-life work. And I've always, and I remember from those days, it's very difficult to find agreement among pro-lifers as to what should be done to end abortion. I always joked if you get 10 pro-lifers together, they'll have 11 different opinions of how to end abortion. And I think that's probably still true. But I've always, because of my experience back then, I've always been of the attitude of people should just do what they can. And they should do what they think is best. As long as it's moral, they should do it. I mean, I'm not going to be against anybody's pro-life work. I may not think it's the most prudent. I may not think it's the most effective. But if you're working to end abortion, God bless you. I'm not going to condemn you for doing work. So I support any and all moral ways to end abortion. And what are those moral ways? That's probably too controversial. My opinions on that is probably too controversial to put out on YouTube. So I will maybe address that in another episode on Odyssey Only or something like that. Okay, so let's get back to the practical ideas of what we can do to really eliminate abortion in this country, make it unthinkable, make it illegal everywhere and unthinkable. First is, I do want to say, although it's been thrown back to the states, we should not ignore the national scene, the federal government in this situation. We still need to pay attention because, first of all, we do eventually want to push for a constitutional amendment, which would require federal officials first passing that before it would go back to each state to vote on it. So, and I think that's down the road a ways. Also, the federal government is going to work very hard. People in the federal government are going to work very hard to try to undermine states. We saw it with Biden's executive order, and he's trying to do even more executive orders to try to invalidate state laws. And so also there's always the possibility Congress will try to pass a federal abortion, pro-abortion laws. And so we do need to always, we can't forget about the federal government, I guess is my point. We need to remember them. But I also want to, this is kind of a tangent, but it reminds me, because you normally see this on the federal level. Just because Roe is overturned doesn't mean now all of a sudden we should start supporting stupid government programs. I mean, I saw this happen. I saw this on social media after Dobbs. There was a lot of mostly left-leaning Catholics who were saying this, but just even I saw more quote-unquote conservative Catholics saying this, that now that Roe is overturned, we really need to work for like family leave bills and maternity leave bills and funding for child programs and welfare programs and things like that. That does not follow. Because the fact of the matter is there is legitimate dispute among Catholics, among pro-lifers, about whether or not those bills are actually pro-life, whether or not those laws would actually help families, help mothers, help people in need. I would argue in the vast majority of cases, they actually hurt. They're anti-family. They are anti-life. They're anti-poor. So I don't think you also have to support these different programs. You do have to support charities and work to try to help women. Obviously, we need to support crisis pregnancy centers, things like that. But we don't have to support federal or state programs because they don't necessarily work. And I would actually argue they don't work. But on a federal level, we really need to support more and more federalism. That's the idea that the states have rights, 10th Amendment, the states have rights, and they have the ability to basically run their state the way they want to without interference of the federal government. And so I think we really need to be pushing for that as much as possible. We need to be encouraging in the people we vote for at the federal level that they be supportive of that idea. So that they're not infringing on the rights of states to make their own laws as they see fit. So I really think that we need to work for federalism. And here's, I'm just going to say it. I've said it before on this podcast, and people who follow me know this is what I think. I think we also should be supportive of secession, a national divorce, if that's what's needed. If a state has pro-life laws that outlaw abortion, the federal government somehow works to undermine those laws, that state should absolutely and positively ignore that, completely ignore it. And if that takes it, and that'd be federalism, first of all. But if the federal government tries to force them to follow these unjust laws, these pro-abortion laws, I mean, I think they should consider secession. Obviously, there's a lot more, it's a lot more practical for a state like Texas or California and the other way, or Florida to secede than a state like Iowa, for example. But you saw the map. I'll pull it up again real quick. Look at that black area there, the Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, Missouri. I mean, that's a nice little area right there that could be a country all to itself. Maybe you could get some of those other southern states like Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee to join in. I mean, think about that right there. Just that southeast part of the country from Texas to Florida up to Missouri, that would be a pretty impressive country, to be honest. And they could have some very good laws. Now, I don't think secession is something we lead with, obviously. We're trying to first get states to pass pro-life laws. Then we work towards a constitutional amendment. But I just think it's very plausible that in the future, that's not going to happen, that we're going to have to potentially have a national divorce. Okay, so let's actually now switch to what we can do. You know, obviously on the federal level, there's not a lot we can do. The first is obviously spiritual. We do need to continue to pray and fast. And I know a lot of us have been doing that, and I think we continue to do that. I think one thing that I believe the Dobbs decision has revealed to those who were unaware is the demonic influence of the pro-abortion movement. I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. When I was in college, involved in pro-life work, I was Protestant still. Most of my pro-life friends in the pro-life group were Catholic. But I had two encounters, spiritual encounters, while I was considering Catholicism that really pushed me into the Catholic camp. One was an experience of heaven, of the divine, and that was, I went to adoration, actually, and I recognized that this was, we were worshiping the Lord. And the second was an experience of the demonic, and that was at a abortion clinic where after police left and everything like that, we were praying at the clinic, and the pro-abortion forces, a number of them stayed, and they were possessed. I'm convinced of that to this day. I saw it in their eyes. I could tell that they were possessed. They were yelling things like, kill the babies, kill the Christians, feed them to the lions, blasphemies that I would never even want think about repeating against our Lord and our Lady. It was interesting, though, that they were anti-Catholic specifically. I was Protestant this time. I was with a bunch of Catholics when this happened, and they were very upset by the Catholic stuff, by rosaries and Our Lady and things like that. And that actually showed me, if the demons hate something, there's a real good chance it's true. And that was definitely a step that took me in the direction of Catholicism when I saw how much they hate Catholicism, much more than my Protestantism. But I knew then that the pro-abortion forces are demonic. Now, I'm not saying every single person who thinks abortion should be legal at times is possessed by the devil or even influenced by demons. But I do think when you're talking about their leaders, when you're talking about the people who attend their marches and things like that, people who defend the clinics and people who work at the clinics, yes, I do think the vast majority of them are at least demonically influenced. And I think this is something as pro-lifers we need to recognize. I see too many respectable pro-life leaders and pro-lifers who want to act like if we just sit down with the pro-abortion forces, we can work out some compromise we're all happy with, or at least they're willing to listen to reason. And I just think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what it is we're fighting against. We're fighting against the forces of darkness. Now, let's be clear here. These pro-abortion forces that are demonically influenced, they're actually not our enemy. We're trying to rescue them from our enemy. The enemy is obviously the devil and his demonic forces that are pushing for abortion. And those who fight for abortion, who are demonically influenced or even demonically possessed in some cases, we're trying to rescue them. We're there for deliverance. Now, that doesn't mean that we allow them to do what they're doing. But the point is that we have to recognize this is a spiritual battle first and foremost. That's why prayer and fasting is important. That's why bringing out the spiritual big guns, like the traditional Latin Mass, like the rosary, things like that, we have to do those things because that's the only way we're going to win. We have to consecrate ourselves to Our Lady. We have to wear the scapular. We have to do things like that. We have to do these things if we're going to win, ultimately. And so that's the most important thing. I think exorcisms are needed. I wish we'd have more priests who were trained in exorcism and more bishops who would assign exorcists to these things. I've been there at abortion clinics where priests would say the prayers of exorcisms outside them. And I think that's very neat. I know one time there was an abortion clinic in like a office complex where there's offices next to each other, and pro-lifers owned the business right next to an abortion clinic. The abortion clinic moved in on them, and so literally they had a mass said at the in one of the office rooms that directly shared a wall with the abortion clinic. They set up a mass, so the mass was being said towards the abortion clinic. And I think that's wonderful. I mean, I think that's exactly how we have to defeat the pro-abortion forces. It's through prayer and fasting and keep these demonic forces at bay. And a corollary of that is we need to protect our churches. We've seen this now. Our churches and our pregnancy centers, our crisis pregnancy centers, are being attacked physically. We need to do everything we can to defend them. There was just a really bad case in Maryland, very close to where I used to live. My daughters actually were on the track team that was sponsored by this parish many years ago, where the church in Bethesda. They desecrated the tabernacle. They tore down the statues of the cross. They toppled a number of the statues. They tried to burn the church down. This is real. This is happening. We have to do everything we can to protect our churches. That doesn't mean we're necessarily going to always be able to protect them. Not every church can have 24/7 coverage. I mean, it's just not possible. But we should do what we can do. Particularly, we should be aware of protecting our churches during the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. Obviously, if they desecrate our Lord in the Eucharist when the church building is closed, that's awful. And if they do anything to the church, that's awful. But during the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, we should make sure we're prepared for any type of action against the church. So that's another spiritual activity we have to do in this battle. Now, let's talk about state and local. This is now, we'll shift from spiritual is most important. Now we'll shift a little bit more to practical. The first thing I would say is contact your state reps. I mean, state reps do not have a lot of people contacting them. They don't have a lot of people who voted for them. The vast majority of people don't even know who their state reps are. Now, I'm talking about your state rep at your House of Representatives and at your state Senate. States are different in how they organize these things. But find out who they are and reach out to them. The day after the Dobbs decision, I wrote to both of my state senator, my state representative, and basically what I said was, hello, with Roe v. Wade being overturned and the issue of abortion returning to the states, I urge you to vote for any pro-life legislation that bans abortion from the moment of conception. This will be my primary issue in voting for my state reps in the future. I think that's important for them to know that you are urging them to overturn any laws that protect abortion, that you want to have laws that protect the unborn from the moment of conception. Obviously, if there's a law that's passed that is 6 weeks after conception, bans after that, that's a good thing. It's just not the best thing. We work towards a ban from the moment of conception. But even from a moment of 6 weeks, that saves a lot of babies. And so I just urge you to do that. And let them know, if they end up not supporting that, you're not going to vote for them and find somebody else. These are small winnable elections in most cases. It doesn't take that many people to win a state rep election. And so in most cases, there are some cases where it's a little bit bigger. Heck, consider running in the next election if you can. It might be that you could easily win. Who knows? There might be only one other person. If you outwork them, you go door to door, you do everything you can, you might be able to win. So I think that's the first thing we need to do on the state level, really work. These state reps almost never matter that much, but now they do. They really matter. And so we want to make sure we elect those who are going to support a pro-life governor, but that's a little bit more difficult to influence as much as you can your state rep. Another thing I think we should do, and I wrote an article about this at Crisis, I think we should move the March for Life to the state level. I think instead of one big national March for Life, I think we should have 50 separate marches for life on the same day. I think June 24th, I know in places like Florida or Texas or California, it might be a little warm, to say the least. I live in Florida. I do know how warm it gets there. But I think having a March for Life in every state capital on the same day, June 24th, perhaps, I think is a wonderful thing. I think it recognizes the reality we're in right now, that we need to work to overturn any pro-abortion laws and to work for pro-life laws at the state level. And so we should let our state representatives, state governor, state officials to know this. So I'm not saying we should abandon the National March for Life forever. Maybe we could have that one in January 22nd still, but then the state ones on June 24th. I really think that's a better way to go about it. And it could be these can be significant in swing states. The states that, let me pull up that map again, the states that are pink or a little bit not as red as the other ones, or black as which are the most pro-life states. I think it could be influential. So I think we should do this.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Playlist shuffled? Check. Drinks on ice? Check. ZBiotics? Make the most of your time with friends by starting your evening with ZBiotics, the only pre-alcohol probiotic designed to make those rough mornings after drinking alcohol a thing of the past. ZBiotics is key for those who live for the moment. Visit ZBiotics.com to learn more.
This one. Okay. I also want to bring up one more thing when it comes to the state level. I think people, this should be in their calculation when they're considering where they live, what state they live in. If you live in a state like California, I honestly believe you should consider moving out. Now, I know some people say, but you're giving up on the state. You're giving up the state. No, the state already gave up on you. You're just simply acknowledging reality. And I think if you live in a state like California, Oregon, Washington, New York, some of the Northeast states, maybe even Illinois, you really should consider moving. I think not just because of abortion, but for a whole host of reasons. A lot of them were exposed during the COVID regime days, which aren't completely over in some states, and that should be a hint that maybe you shouldn't live there anymore. But I think you should maybe consider if you're already, I'm not saying somebody who's definitely, they're not even considering moving, but if you're already considering moving, maybe move to a state that's either already pro-life to make it more pro-life, or is kind of pushing pro-life and you can help push it a little bit further. I think these are things we can do. And obviously, it's not just the pro-life issue, it's a freedom issue as well. Typically the states, I'll pull up the chart, the map again. If you note, the states that are the most pro-life, a lot of them were also the best when it came to, for example, the COVID rules. South Dakota obviously was the best. Florida was very good. Texas was very good. Some of these southern states, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, I believe they were better than some states. So I think, you know, Illinois is one of the worst. And look, it's also very pro-abortion. California, New York. So I think we really need to be thinking about these things, about where different states are when it comes to the abortion laws and where they are when it comes to freedom and liberty, and consider moving to states that are more free, especially if you live near a border of a good state. Like I live near the border of Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky. Those states are relatively the same when it comes to these type of laws. They're actually about the same. Ohio might be about maybe the worst, but they're not that far off. But let's say if Indiana was much better than Ohio, yeah, maybe I should move across the border, which isn't that far away. Obviously, there's a lot of factors, finding a good parish, things like that are also factors. But let's just, I just think I want to put that out there. It's something pro-lifers should do, is consider what state they live in. Now, when it comes to actual activism, I think there's a few things we can do. The first is we really need to double our efforts to support our local crisis pregnancy centers. In fact, I will say I put my money where my mouth is. I supported one of our local, I had a monthly donation to one of our crisis pregnancy centers here. I just added a second monthly donation of the same amount to another good crisis pregnancy center in the area. We have a number of them in our area, fortunately, but I was like, okay, I need to do something. I did that right after I talked to my wife. We did that right after Dobbs, because I thought, okay, we need to up that. And I think everybody should do that. I challenge you. Find your local crisis pregnancy center and assist them. Whether it's, if you don't have money, that's fine. Volunteer. Find time to volunteer for them. Donate clothes to them or goods, whatever it is that they're asking for. But do what you can to support your local crisis pregnancy centers. The good news about abortion being made more difficult to obtain is there will be more women going to these crisis pregnancy centers. They will need to help more women. So that's a good thing. It's unfortunate they're in a crisis pregnancy center. That's why I said the good news, kind of in air quotes. It's not good when a woman's in a crisis pregnancy, obviously, but it's good that more will be coming to crisis pregnancy centers. So do everything you can to support them. Advertise for them as well. Let people know about them. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can help them beyond just donating money. And obviously donate money is probably the first thing to do, but do other things as well. An interesting story is one of our local crisis pregnancy centers here, it was going to have a fundraiser at a local restaurant, and the restaurant canceled them. Said, no, we don't support the work you do. And so you can't have it here. So they moved it to another location. But I think it's interesting, you know, the whole lie that they care about women is obviously exposed when they don't want to help a center that helps women. So do everything you can to help them out. If you own a restaurant or a venue, offer to have a fundraiser there. See, lots of different ways you can help. That's the first area of activism. The second thing I would say is, if you live in a state where abortion is now illegal or very difficult, like maybe their law, you can't have it after 6 weeks, something like that, and there is still an abortion clinic or a Planned Parenthood nearby. Like, there's a Planned Parenthood here in Cincinnati that is now saying they're only doing abortion referrals to other states. They're not actually going to do abortions. Hold them to the fire. Make sure they're not actually doing it. Do what you can to keep them honest. Call up and try to make an appointment for an abortion. You know, obviously, if you're a man, it's going to be more difficult. But if you're a young woman, or you can pretend you're a younger woman with your voice, call up and try to make an appointment for an abortion and see what they say. Tell them you're 12 weeks. Tell them you're 13 weeks. Tell them you're 7 weeks. Tell them you're 20 weeks, whatever the case may be, and see what they say. I mean, if they're going to schedule an abortion for you, then they could be breaking the law. And so you need to report them. So keep at the abortion clinics, the Planned Parenthoods that are supposedly not doing abortions. These people lie. They cheat, they steal. Obviously, if they murder, they're going to do all the other things as well. So don't trust that they're actually keeping abortion, not doing abortions at their facility. If you're in a pro-abortion state, so that's for if you're in a pro-life state, if you're in a pro-abortion state, continue to counsel, pray, work at these various abortion clinics outside of them. Don't work at the abortion clinics, obviously. Work to be at the clinic as much as you can, to counsel women to not abort their babies, to offer them alternatives, to pray there, pray the rosary there, do different things like that. Continue the activism in those states. And if you live in a pro-life state, but you're near a pro-abortion state and you can travel and go pray and counsel at an abortion clinic not too far away, do that as well. Help out our brothers and sisters in the worst off states. So for example, if you're in Indiana or Wisconsin, you can get down to Chicago area, do that. I mean, that's an example of where you can just drive into Chicago. I'm sure there's still a lot of abortion clinics there. That was actually where I was the first time I was ever arrested in an abortion clinic, was in Chicago. Good times. Okay, so do that as much as you can. Also support Red Rose Rescue. I know a lot of people don't know about it as much, but Red Rose Rescue, I'm a big supporter of them. Monica Miller helps organize it. It's a great organization. And basically what they do is they go into abortion clinics. They walk in with red roses and they try to counsel women right there in the waiting room. And they won't leave. They'll just stay there until the police arrest them. In fact, a few of them have been sentenced recently. I just heard, I cannot confirm this yet, but Joan Andrews Bell, who is my number one hero in the world, she is the greatest pro-lifer on earth. She would hate for me to say that because she's so humble. She is a living saint. She would hate for me to say that as well. But I hear she was just sentenced to 30 days in jail for a Red Rose rescue she did about a year or so ago. You know what I think is ironic? And I think she would agree with this. Her 30 days in jail will actually be more helpful for the pro-life cause and for the cause of Christ than most of the stuff we do. Me yapping at this podcast isn't as effective in ending abortion as Joan Andrews Bell being in jail for 30 days. I'm convinced of that. She will do more good because she will offer it up for the babies. She will evangelize those around her. She will do more good for the pro-life movement than I will ever do. So I want to tell people to encourage people to support Red Rose Rescues. Do everything you can financially. If you feel called and you feel like you can do that yourself, reach out to them and do what you can to support them as well. So I think these are the type of things we can do. So I'm going to wrap it up there, but I just want to encourage people that the highlights here are pray and fast, work at the state level, support your local crisis pregnancy center, make sure clinics are not doing abortions if they're not allowed to by law. And if they are doing them, go there and do what you can to pray and to counsel women to not have abortion. Let's continue to work to make abortion not only illegal throughout this country, but also unthinkable. Okay, that's it for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.